This is the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along. Good to have your company again for another D Word Podcast. On this edition, it's great to welcome back Jade Nichols, who was an Admiral nurse last time we talked, but she now runs her own consultancy. We're going to be talking to her about her family experience of vascular dementia. Well, Jane, it's great to welcome you back to the D Word. We have been trying to work out when the last time was, but we'll just say it was in the past, and it's very enjoyable then, and it will be now, I'm sure. So welcome back to the show. And, you know, this time we want to talk a little bit about vascular dementia, which I know you've got, not only professional experience, but obviously personal experience of as well.
Yeah. Hi, Peter. Yeah, it's nice to see you again. I wanted to talk a little bit about vascular dementia, particularly from a personal point of view, like you said, because my stepfather was diagnosed with vascular dementia early this year, and there were so many things that came out of that assessment and problems that we had trying to get the assessments done, like I know thousands of other people experience as well. So I think and one of those particular things I wanted to talk about was IQ, which might sound, I know,
No.
a bit odd, but
No, it's very interesting. I mean, you know, right, let's start the story at the beginning. I mean, what led you to believe that a diagnosis was necessary? What was going on?
Yeah, so we noticed changes mainly in his personality initially. It wasn't really memory loss. So he was becoming a little bit snappy, which he wasn't before. And also little post-it notes started appearing all over the place. And he would sit in front of he loves using his laptop and still does. But he would spend a lot of time changing passwords, forgetting passwords, which, trust me, I kind of get that. I really do. But this was almost on a daily basis. So I think my mother and I, because he lives with my mum, we noticed that he was also routines were slightly changing for him as well around the house. So he was always a very good cook, and he did a majority of the cooking. And mum found that he was actually struggling to follow the sequence of a recipe, and starting to burn food as well. They were the initial telltale signs, and that was probably about 2 years ago.
So, you know, you see the signs, whenever we see the signs of something, first recourse is to go to the GP, and, you know, this is going on. What do you think? I mean, what happened at kind of that stage when you first approached GP?
Yeah, I think, it was helpful in a way, because obviously my background, I used to, as you know, be an Admiral nurse for Dementia UK. So I had an understanding of how people might present, etc. I had a chat with him first, obviously. We went together to see the GP. And the first thing they did was sort of a very basic little test around, you know, what year it is and what day of the week it is. And he, I think out of six questions asked, he got four right. So they were a bit, it's probably nothing to worry about. And they ran the usual blood tests, urine samples, just to make sure there was no infection that might be causing him any problems. After a while, they all came back clear. And I think because, as I said, because I've kind of worked with people with similar symptoms, I was quite insistent, shall we say, that we went to the next level So we did get a referral to the memory clinic, which took a little while, I have to say, because they're very busy people. So yes. Sorry, go on.
I mean, thankfully you had your background. I guess first question that comes out of that is, if it hadn't have been someone with your background, where would it have gone?
Absolutely. To be honest, I probably would, oh, okay, and it would have just got left, and until things had got considerably worse, I should think. So yeah, I need to.
Do you think that points to a bit of an issue in terms of GB training, that everybody's thoughts on dementia first come to the memory? So, who's the Prime Minister, what day it is, what do you have for breakfast type questions. Obviously, what you've described to us at the beginning is a whole different area, not related to memory. And I just wonder, it's interesting that, maybe GBs are not trained to pick that up. Some are, some aren't, or,
Absolutely. I mean, I think, we always, there's always a need to learn, regardless of what we do for a job, etc. And we will all have strong points and weak points. And I think general training, general awareness would be a good thing, and I'm sure they do get that to a degree. But like you say, I think people commonly think about memory loss, as being the most prevalent symptom of any type of dementia, whereas we know that isn't really the case. And so yeah, I mean, it certainly couldn't do any harm. And I think it's just that thinking outside the box, really, isn't it, when people walk into your surgery, and also finding out how they what they did in the past, what kind of level of career did they have, etc. I think that can make a big difference to how someone presents, because they obviously just see the person walking through the door. They don't know everything that went on, and it wouldn't be fair to expect them to either.
I think interesting thing with semantics, isn't it? Because you said we go to the next stage, and it's called the memory clinic. So, immediately we've got the, well, there must be a problem with memory here because you've got it in the title on the door.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we saw the initial screening was actually by one of the nurses in the surgery, but she was, affiliated with the memory clinic. And yes, you're right, just in its own language, it just kind of reinforces what people already think. But again, my mum didn't want to come, but I suggested that maybe she write a little letter, detailing all the things that she'd noticed changes in him. Because what I was trying to safeguard against, again, was that actually he might do very well in the actual assessment, but behind the scenes, what's going on in reality is very different. So she did that, and I went in with my stepdad for the first part of this initial screening, and he completed everything. I think he got one thing wrong. I can't remember what that one thing was, but he was struggling to recall the information. So to me, it was the length of time he was taking. So he got there, which is great. He got there, but and then just as I was leaving, well, she said to him, okay, so we've done the test, and actually you've come out as average. And his face dropped, and she said, oh, you look disappointed. And he said, well, I've never been classed as average before. And she said, well, you function very well compared to some of the people I have coming. He said, yeah, but I'm not happy with that. Anyway, so. And as we were leaving, I let him go out the door first. This may seem a little bit underhand to some people, but I think there was that protecting mum, protecting his feelings as well. And I just turned around to the nurse and said, oh, mum's written you a letter. Can I leave this with you, please? And she was like, yeah, no, that's fine. Anyway, about 2 months later, we got another appointment to go and see somebody at the actual see a psychologist at the memory clinic. So I think again, without that letter, probably wouldn't have got on to the next stage.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We've got some great guests lined up on the podcast, but if you've got a story to tell, we'd love to hear from you. So do drop us an email to tdwradio@gmail.com. Back to my guest now, Jane Nichols. Yeah, this is a, you know, it's the whole thing about health advocacy, isn't it? And the fact that right, you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, people kind of, you know, my age or, you know, a lot of people, I think, when you're a kid, you were learnt to kind of look up to policemen, politicians, doctors, and put on the pedestal. And it wasn't a done thing to ask anything of them. And, you know, it's true that the world's changed, obviously, in a lot of that. But still, I think that kind of lingers on. If someone does say to you, well, yeah, OK, that's all right. I don't think there's a problem. And, you know, perhaps there is. It takes a lot of confidence to, you know, even do what your mum's done. Write a letter and say, well, hold on a minute. Don't you need to look at this?
Yeah. And I think mum felt a bit it felt a bit deceitful because she didn't, you know, he wasn't aware of that. But from her point of view, as like I said, it's just being... To her, it was being kind, and she, you know, didn't want to sit there and she'd already discussed some of the things with him. You know, she'd already said she was noticing changes. But it was like the biggest change, definitely the snappiness, and he couldn't take on too many tasks as well. So he was always quite good at multitasking, but that has over time significantly reduced. So if he's trying to do something on the laptop and my mum says anything to him, he automatically shuts her down, and it's very much, no, I can't, I'm doing something, don't talk to me. And he wouldn't have been like that with her before. So yeah, that's a particularly tricky one for her, I think.
Yeah, most definitely so. I mean, and when you know, going through those things, you know, what comes to mind with me as well is, with your background, did the D word kind of hover a bit when you were looking at what was happening? Whereas if you didn't have your background, the D word may not even have been in anybody's thoughts at that stage.
Yeah, true. I mean, I suppose the thing is, but on the flip side of that as well, I was very aware that because I spend a lot of time with families and people with dementia, that I didn't want to be looking for something that wasn't there, if that makes sense. Because you know when you live in a certain world, if you like, then you it's very easy to get on the one track. So I think I had to sort of be very careful that, okay, do I just think this because I see lots of other people with some of these symptoms? But no, I think intuitively you just know, as you would if it was any family member and something's wrong. You always say trust your gut, and it's usually right.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you've gone through another stage. You're now with a psychologist. Yeah. What happened then?
Oh, lots of questions, lots of tests. He actually quite enjoyed doing some of the tests, so drawing pictures, trying to recall information. And I think the one thing that really stuck in his mind was, she asked him, it was the first time that somebody had asked him to remember an address. And I noticed that when he was answering questions, he was saying things really fast. And I thought he's doing that because he's trying to get it out before he forgets. So if you ask him his date of birth, he would just roll it off at 100 miles an hour. And the address, he couldn't remember the street name. And you could, I was watching him, and you could see him sitting there and almost, see the clock's ticking. And he was, I can't remember. I can't remember. And it was almost like a panic sort of set in with him a bit. And then she would ask instructions like, here's a bit of paper, here's a pen. I want you to pick the pen up and put it on the paper. And he was picking both things up and sort of wrapping them together. And I know there are any little things, but it's just that being able to follow simple instructions. And so I think he found that a bit worrying, because obviously I think he started to see that there were things, whereas before, I think, with any of us, if something happens, we learn our own coping mechanisms without actually necessarily even knowing that we're doing that. We just naturally do it. So yes, I think that's when he started to really become a bit worried himself. And also he started asking questions, why are we here again? What have we come here for? So it was having lots of conversations about the same thing with him. And also making it important that, ruling out other things as well. So he had a CT scan just to check, and that really, I think they picked up tiny little changes in the vessels in his brain, but more age related. There wasn't anything particularly worrying. He for a long, long time, he was okay, might be something, but I feel all right. I feel all right.
Sure.
So.
It's interesting, what you say that started off, you go stage one and it's all memory based, and you get to where, you are there, and suddenly you started to think, well, why is she asking me to put a pen on a bit of paper, or why do I have to draw this? Wait a minute, there must be something that clicks. I said, well, that isn't just memory, is it? Something else going on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing as well is he started shuffling. So his spatial awareness became not very good, and also he was shuffling a lot more. So when we realized that, he was then sent off for a load of other tests, and that was because they then thought, oh, has he got Parkinson's? Which they've ruled out now, but the last, I'm going forward a bit, so the last kind of year, so he was, this whole process took about a year, which I know is actually quite quick for some people. And then he was given the formal diagnosis of vascular dementia in January this year. And because the word Parkinson's had been mentioned in the past, he kept telling people that he'd been told he got Parkinson's, and sort of having to then have those conversations about vascular dementia, and how it would affect him. And he was, for the first few months, he was very much, well, how long have I got left? What's the prognosis? How long have I got left? And I could feel myself saying to him, well, that's very much how long's a piece of string, which is true, because how long have any of us got left? But he felt that I was kind of saying that just to fend off the inevitable. But over time, that question has been asked less and less. And I've, and it's been very much trying to focus on the here and now, and you've got to enjoy life. Yes, you have this diagnosis, but it doesn't mean the end of everything. We just take day by day, one step at a time. It's taken the best part of this year to get to that stage, understandably. I mean, it's a bit of a whirlwind, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, you were saying that with your experience and your background, might look at you and say, oh, she's holding something back here, not telling me the true story. But when you get beyond that, and you saying, well, How long's a bit of string? Let's live life. That becomes reassuring. You kind of you turn the corner there, don't you? Which
Yes.
hopefully has happened. I mean, what was your mum's response when the formal diagnosis came in?
Pride. She was very much, well, her first, so my biological father passed away when he was 53, and it was very sudden. So she, this is her second marriage, and I think her reaction was, I've already lost one husband, I don't want to lose another. And I think she wasn't shocked because she knew there was something not right. And to her, him having a diagnosis actually really helped, because I think she started to think that she was going, to use her words, going a little bit round the bend, because things would get moved in the house. And my husband and I have this all the time of, you're moving stuff. No, I'm clearing up. I'm tidying up. I'm not just moving it randomly. So, and that this whole, this is what was happening with them at home, but actually it wasn't mum, all the time. He was also starting to move things around, and yeah, so I think some of it helped her understand. Also the things like I mentioned earlier about the cooking and not being able to sequence, etc. So I think she found that, I don't, reassuring is the wrong word, but it helped to a degree. And then I think over time the panic then starts setting in of, well, what's it going to look like in a year's time? What's it going to look like in 2 years' time? Which is for both of them, those feelings for both of them. So yeah, it's been an interesting 12 months.
I'm absolutely sure. And it must be difficult. And you give the advice of live today, concentrate on what you can do and what you can't do. But it's kind of human nature to step forward a year, step forward 2 years or whatever. And I guess that must be one of the most difficult things in terms of being a caregiver.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like you say, saying to somebody, "Oh, live life day to day," it's like if you get a diagnosis of anything, you do become a little bit, focused on it, understandably. And sometimes it can become all encompassing. But I think time helps, because it's that kind of, okay, 6 months later, I'm still here. 12 months later, I'm still here. Okay, so maybe I don't need to worry quite as much as I used to. So, and I kind of hope for him that it will continue like that. It will, because yes, he's got other health issues, but then, I'm not saying all people who are, aging have problems, but we do. We get older, things ache and all the rest of it. So yeah, he, bless him, he's a character. I'm actually, it's interesting in a way, seeing that character change. And in some ways he's very, he's quite spontaneous, and his sense of humor as well has changed, but in quite a nice way. So it's little things like that we kind of, hold on to. So, but one thing I actually wanted to, I mentioned IQ, which some people might think sounds a bit. So one of the things that came up when I mentioned in the assessment that they said about, he was sort of average. He'd come out as average. He was functioning well, blah, blah, blah. So, and this same conversation came up with a psychologist after she'd done a couple of tests. And I said to her, so my stepdad used to be a member of Mensa. So he had an IQ of 154. So he excelled at what he did. He was bright as a button. So that is why when she said, you're, functioning on an average level, he was like, oh, because It sounds, some people might think it sounds snobby, but to him, that is, he's, that's an important factor for him. Huge, he's very, he was very proud of that fact and still is. And again, that to him was, this is important to me, and somebody's telling me I haven't got that anymore, you know, and that part of me is starting to kind of go. But it does call it, and we did, when once we told the psychologist how he used to function, and she was very interested in that side of things and said, okay, well, I need to take that back to the MDT, the multidisciplinary team, to discuss your case, because actually that throws a new light on things. So it just kind of shows, I think, that a lot of the tools that are used to assess people are worked on an average. You know, they, which I suppose to a degree they've got to be, but again, it's that thinking outside of the box and finding out about somebody's background, because yeah, you could be getting a completely different picture and missing it. And I have to say, it's something I've never really thought about or considered in my working life. So yeah, that was where the IQ side of it came in.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
On UK Health Radio, we have over 40 shows dedicated to every aspect of health, all available to listen again or download from the website ukhealthradio.com. My guest on this edition of the podcast is Jane Nichols.
No, I think it's, you know, it's very important, a good point, one that I hadn't considered. And it's about, it's kind of a holistic looking at a whole person, which I guess, going back to the beginning of the story, if you're a GB that you've got X number of people to see and they've got 15 minutes each, is difficult to achieve. And it kind of seems as you go higher up the ladder, then people start to get interested in things like that. Whereas if they were interested in it at the beginning, it would obviously save a lot of time, give quicker diagnoses and, you know, everything else. I mean, you're saying that, you know, your stepdad's a bit of a character, I think was what you said. Do you think, you know, we talked about IQ, do you think that's important as well? Because people that I know that are, people don't like the phrase living well with dementia, but people that are living with dementia have all got really strong characters.
And I don't know. I mean, you hear people say sometimes it's because the filter's lifted. You know, they're less aware of, and actually, you know, there is a degree of that. I think it's nice to be able to voice your opinion. It's nice to be able to be honest, right? Not everyone might appreciate what you're saying, but yeah. So I think it's that personality changes. You see that quite a lot. And I think it's actually being mindful of that, and with that, considering that people's interests might have changed, so they might have enjoyed playing golf, but actually now they might like, I don't know, like going, I was going to say motorcycling. That's only because my husband's a motorcyclist. That's probably not the best thing to be looking at. But you know, they might, I don't want to do golf anymore. I'd like to learn how to paint pictures of the outside, you know, world, nature, etc. So just because somebody always used to do something, that might change. So we have to change with them, I
Yeah,
think, and facilitate that as well.
it's that kind of case of entering into a different world, isn't it? You have to enter into their world, whatever's there, and how things have changed or not, as the as case may be. Well, first, thanks for telling the story. I
That's
think
all
it's
right.
really useful, and obviously, we wish your stepdad all the best
Thank you.
in going forward. Now, just a little bit about you. I know you've kind of you were an admiral nurse and you've changed things a little bit. Tell us about your new project.
Mine not right. Okay, so because of this whole situation, really, I decided that in order to support my mum, that I needed to have flexibility with work. I needed to be able to dictate, if you like, my own hours, so I can fit it around many hospital appointments for him. So I decided to set up a consultancy. And that's really, I mean, there are lots of things. Obviously, my background is supporting people with learning disabilities. I'm very interested in sort of neurodiversity, so people who are autistic, people who have ADHD or ADHD, and so I'm still learning the lingo. And obviously the dementia side of it, including those neurodiverse people. So I decided to set up this consultancy to as a support network, so actually providing support to people who have questions, etc., about certain conditions, how somebody might present, what how can we improve life for people across the board, really. And I get quite a few parents that come to me with children that younger children that might have just received a diagnosis of autism and panicking a bit. But it's just that kind of, again, it's just reaffirming that it's just different, we're all wired differently, and it's just that, really, learning about how to support the person. And dementia obviously comes into that as well, so supporting caregivers as well. And I think trying to also look at the positives as well as, obviously there is a darker side to it, there's no brushing over that, but it's just trying to get that balance right for people. So yeah, it's been a slow process getting it off the ground, but we're getting there.
Good. Well, good luck with that. And I think
Thank
one
you.
thing it does do as well is there's a lot of commonalities between those conditions that you've mentioned. And from a dementia point of view, it kind of drags it a little bit into the mainstream, if I can use those words. And it's not out there on a limb, along with other kind of issues. So, I think that's really
Absolutely.
important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know for a fact that, that a lot of people are going to be coming through now. Diagnosis of people being diagnosed or being realised that more people are autistic, that actually more and more older adults that wouldn't have had that, because people just weren't aware of it so much many years ago. So there are going to be a lot of people out there that have, are autistic and have dementia. And I definitely think there needs to be more research and support in that area. So, yeah, interesting,
Right.
I
See,
think.
that's another door open to Jane for another
Yeah.
episode. But thanks so much. It's been great to talk to you again, and we'll have to get you back on and talk some more. But for now, anyway, thanks for being my guest.
No, you're very welcome, and thank you for having me. It's been nice to have a chat.
Thanks to Jane for sharing her experience, and I wish her every success in her new venture, JEN Assessments. That's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.